I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press.
I'm Christine Brennan with USA Today.
I'm Mike Lubig of the New York Daily News and SportsOnEarth.com. And this is the Friday edition of the Sports Reporters Podcast. We're coming to you after the end of one of the greatest World Series I have ever seen, which included the greatest game of baseball I have ever seen last Sunday night and into Monday morning in Houston. And the Astros win in seven games. And what we were reminded of 1 year after Cubs versus Indians is that baseball at its best, and we have seen it at its best the last two Octobers, makes you feel at the end as if you've watched seven Super Bowls and not just the one we get in football. And, you know, people say, well, Game 7 wasn't a great game. I thought from the time the Astros got ahead 5-0, there was drama every pitch and every inning after that. I thought that even though the Dodgers were the best record in baseball this year, the best team from start to finish was the Astros. And Mitch and Chris, I've been writing this and saying this for months. Watching this Astros team with all the young talent in the room is like watching the Golden State Warriors play basketball.
Well, but like the Golden State Warriors in Cleveland, which we've now had for a while, it's nice to see the two best teams end up there facing each other at the end. Sports has been a lot of hype and then teams not living up to it. You know, NFL teams that are doing great and then they fall in the first round of the playoffs. NCAA tournaments where you think you got the favorite and they get knocked off early. And you're kind of like, oh, well, who are these people doing here? What a surprise winner. No surprise winners with Houston winning it all and the Dodgers getting within one game of it. These were the two best teams in baseball. They both won over 100 games. They both have bright futures. Sports Illustrated predicted Houston was going to be here 3 years ago with this. I heard Justin Verlander say, and it was interesting to me, obviously, because he comes from Detroit. They asked him, you know, why didn't this happen with you in Detroit, and how's it feel now in Houston? He said it's a new brand, a new breed of game. I think that were his words, and that was code for all these analytics that Houston uses that Detroit has never used. And you know, it's like he got shot into the future. And is now with a team that's built for the future. And I have every reason to believe that they should be back competing for this again next year. Don't you, Chris?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there's all that talk about Game 5 and how great it was and how those other games, 6 and 7, couldn't live up to it. Reminded me very much of the 75 World Series and Game 6 and the Carlton Fisk home run. And then Game 7, the Reds won it. But we still remember that. So there's no letdown. It's not as if like, oh, Game 7 wasn't as great or Game 6 wasn't as great as Game 5. You just remember these moments. And I think the 75 World Series is so memorable for that reason. I think this one will also stand the test of time. And you also look at the Dodgers. While the Astros were pushing all the right buttons and doing everything and the analytics and winning all these games at home and so great and getting Verlander at the exact right time, you know, you've got Yu Darvish who pitched poorly in Game 3. But he got just like five outs. And then, of course, it seemed like he went too long in Game 7. So you can start looking at these things. Springer gets the home run in the second inning. And the Astros really are on their way. And while it seemed as if the Astros were destined in the hurricane, it just like the Red Sox and the Boston Marathon and all those things that happen, those kind of preordained wonderful moments that sports give us, I think the Dodgers also did lend their hand, so to speak, in a few ways not so good in terms of giving the Astros those opportunities, especially in Game 7.
Well, I wrote about this after Game 3. We saw the best and the worst of analytics, but we also saw in one of the greatest managing games I've ever seen from AJ Hinch in Game 7, which is sometimes you got to go with your eyes and with your gut. Mitch and Chris, from the time Clayton Kershaw pitched through the seventh inning of Game 1, over the next 20 innings of the World Series, only my twisted mind cared about this. Dave Roberts used 17 pitchers in those 20 innings. Yeah. Nothing like it has ever happened in the World Series. Now, I know that Hinch used five pitchers in Game 7, and I had told people all the day, you're going to see Justin Verlander warming up. If there's a chance for him to close and they need him, they'll pitch him. Charlie Morton made that a moot point. And for all the things that happened in this World Series, and George Springer 100% deserved to be MVP, the Astros don't win the World Series without Charlie Morton, who in two game sevens, okay, he pitches five shutout innings against the Yankees, and then he comes out of the bullpen to pitch 4 1-run innings in the World Series.
Isn't that always the case with pitchers, it seems, when you get into a World Series with star pitchers versus like the second star or the third guy on the thing? For all the stars that were in this World Series, Clayton Kershaw has his head in his hands at the end. You know, he starts game one and five. He pitches in relief in seven. He did not take over the series as great a pitcher as he is. Justin Verlander, as great a season as he had, his weakest moments, if you look at the ultimate results, ended up in the World Series. He got his first loss with Houston.
And Mitch, he only gave up five hits in two starts.
No, it was just inopportune hits at the wrong time, a home run, a hit by pitch, a double that got lucky. But it always happens, Mike. That's my point. You know, you end up with these star pitchers, and Yu Darvish is a star, and he was probably as close as you could get to a GOAT in the World Series. And it ends up with Charlie Morton being the guy. It ends up with George Springer, the first time he's ever gone to an All-Star game is this year. And I mean, his numbers were off the charts. What he did put him in the category of Reggie Jackson and guys like five home runs. It sets records for most extra base hits, total bases, consecutive games in a row with a home run. So that's the beauty of baseball, is that you get to October and yes, you have stars that make you want to watch, but it is frequently not the stars who end up winning the series for you. You know, they help, they have their moments, but it's usually somebody, you know, like Morton or Springer.
Or Mickey Lolich. Let's throw in a name from our past, was the star of the 68 World Series. Exactly. You know, and speaking of watching, you know, this series did great TV ratings-wise. It did not do as well as last year, but nothing is going to do as well as the Cubs and Indians. And everyone getting a chance to see the Cubs finally win it. But what interests me is here, like, we can sprinkle in conversation and the three of us can talk about the old times in the World Series. In 30 years, what kids have seen these games? And I know this is an old complaint. We've talked about it before. Everyone talks about it. The start time of these games, especially on the East Coast and even the central part of the United States. But where is the fan base going to be in 30 or 40 years if you don't have the kids today? I hate to throw a wet blanket on this, but I do think that is a problem for baseball. And it's the love of the game that we have because those were afternoon games most of the time that we were able to watch.
I don't know. That ship has so sailed, though. They're never going back to afternoon games. And by the way, I'll throw on to what you said, Chris, which I totally agree with. I used to always lament about late games and say we're not building a kid fan base for baseball. We're not building it. Now, when I've gotten to a certain age, I say you're also losing your older fan base because there are a lot of diehard sports fans who had to go to sleep and tape it and wake up in the morning to watch the end of the World Series because they can't stay up through it. But I you know, as much as I totally agree with you, I don't know what are they going. They're never going back to 3 p.m. games with the money that's involved with this.
The fan base is getting younger in this sport. Baseball's cool again. And, there's still a lot of work to be done on pace of play. I'm hoping that going forward, the African-American presence in this sport, the sport that I think of as Willie Mays and the great Henry Aaron, is going to be increased. But this sport right now, I've been saying this for a year and a month now. Baseball's having a moment. And I hope that they go forward and build on it. The ratings were never going to be this year what they were last year, but they were pretty damn good this year. And you see that it is sustainable over 10 games. I was saying to Unhinged Pellegrino, our producer, before we started today, that, you know, a friend of mine kept saying, oh, I wish it was best of 15. I said, no. We need a resolution tonight. We have arrived at the final act of this World Series. And by the way, getting back to Kershaw, Mitch, and this is not a second guess. I had no I sent an Astros fan friend of mine a text in the afternoon. I said, he is not going to be up to the circumstances of this occasion. If you know your ace pitcher has enough arm left to give you four innings, then you have to start him in game seven. And I know Bumgarner came out of the bullpen one time. I thought it was insane. If you know that Clayton Kershaw has that much left in the tank, even though he couldn't get through the fifth inning of Game 5, you got to start him in the damn game.
But how do you know he wouldn't know that? I mean, I think that they were surprised that he was continuing to pitch effectively. I think they thought they'd bring him in for an inning or two, and he just kept going. But, I mean, do you think they... He said to them, oh, my God, I feel like, I haven't pitched in 10 days. I think if he had told them that, they might have started him. You don't know until you get in there.
Yu Darvish was never going to win this game. We all make predictions about sports that are right and wrong, and then they get sorted out by events afterwards. You could see in his first start in this World Series that he was not up to the circumstances of what I call the occasion. And you just, Mitch... In a game seven, you just want to get through the first three innings. And you saw how fast Hinch got McCullers out of there. He did not wait. And even in the second inning, you could see it coming apart for Darvish. And when he got behind on Springer, you know, if you were a Dodger fan, you could have been hiding under the desk at that point.
Well, let me just rewrite history. The Dodgers had every opportunity to get Justin Verlander. They had the prospects. Yep. The Tigers were talking to them about that deal. The Tigers just wanted prospects. They traded their present for future, or as we say in Detroit, for three beans that are going to grow into a beanstalk, and we gave away the cow. But they didn't pull the trigger on it. They went for Darvish instead. Verlander ends up at Houston, not only, you know, gets them into the position where they have the record they do and gets them through the wins the ALCS MVP, but how many moments does the front office sit there going, maybe we should have gone a different direction at trade deadline? So something to look back on.
May I point out one thing? For all the money that the Los Angeles Dodgers are still spending on baseball players, and I'm pretty sure because I keep revising this list, Mitch and Chris, only one baseball team with a payroll of over $200 million has ever won the World Series, and it was the 2009 New York Yankees. They came close, the Dodgers did. God bless them, and they may win next year or the year after. If you think you can spend your way to the World Series trophy, you're insane.
Well, and how about a shout out? We've mentioned Verlander, Justin Verlander, but a future Hall of Famer for sure, first ballot. And he gets the one thing he did not have, and that was the World Series championship. He'd been in, what, two other World Series, lost them both, right? The Cardinals and the Giants. And not spectacular at all in those two. And he gets a chance. He was 4-1 in the postseason. And that was fitting. Again, if we're talking about these moments, these iconic moments that a World Series will be remembered for, this one will also be remembered for the getting Verlander that World Series ring and that last little notch in his resume as he moves right to Cooperstown.
Yeah, somebody, we were having a discussion yesterday about if his career ended today, is he a surefire Hall of Famer? And I said, how can he not be? I mean, it's the last thing that he didn't have was a World Series ring. He's already got, ALCS MVP. He's got Cy Young. He's got two no-hitters. He's got all those strikeouts. He's a workhorse. I thought you were going to say Carlos Beltran, by the way, when you started what you were saying, because there's another guy who's 40 years old and has waited, 19
years. And he's going to the Hall of Fame. And he's going into the Hall of Fame.
And he's got it. So hats off to him, too.
And one other thing, and Chris touched on it before, and we have seen this before in sports. And I always preface this by saying, after the Boston Marathon bombing, sports didn't bring any the dead back, okay? After, in 2001, a rousing World Series that ended with the Diamondbacks winning didn't change what had happened. But there are times, and sports at its best makes communities and teams feel like they're in something together. I was in Houston right after the storm and went back there last weekend, and you could just feel this Houston Strong thing was real. Jose Altuve, who might be my favorite baseball player of all time, was on with Jimmy Fallon last night. And it was hyperbole, but it was wonderful hyperbole. He said, we could not have done this without those people, meaning the people of Houston. And it doesn't always work out that way in sports. But man, when it does, sports does the thing that it can still do, Mitch and Chris, which is take great big places and make them feel like a high school gym in a small town.
Well, it was a great end to a really interesting baseball season, and now we are football. And Deshaun Watson makes news in the middle of the week, and there's no good news that you can make in the middle of the week in football, only bad. I don't know what he was doing in practice that could end up with a season-ending injury in ACL, but he's gone after seven games, and we are never going to know what kind of a rookie season this kid could have ended up having. He honestly, this is not hyperbole, he could have been in an MVP discussion.
You bet.
In a down year with a lot of star players like Rodgers and others out, he was on pace for like 43 touchdown passes. I've read the rookie record is 26. That's how far ahead he was of what everybody else was doing. 62% of his passes, and Houston looked like it had finally complemented its defense with an offensive star, and now he's done. What is this? Obviously, we know what it does for the Texans, but just let's talk for a second about him, this, and the whole thing about the NFL losing stars at a record pace.
Mitch, you know, I said this to you this morning. They want the guy, the mook from Papa John's wants to still think that interest is declining because of anthem protests and Colin Kaepernick. Look at the war of attrition. Look at this kid. I don't know if you guys saw it. I was watching it at the ballpark the other day. He and Russell Wilson provided one of the most entertaining games of the entire football season last Sunday afternoon. Mitch, you're 100% right. He was absolutely playing himself into the MVP conversation. So now in basically half a season, look what we've lost in this sport. We have lost Aaron Rodgers. We have lost J.J. Watt. So the guy I think is the best player, the best defensive player. We lose Odell Beckham, who people think is the most exciting player. We haven't even talked about Dalvin Cook and Andrew Luck. And now we lose Deshaun Watson, Julian Edelman. Stars fall every week. Mitch, I think.
Literally.
Stars fall every week almost as fast as penalty flags fall in this sport, which is another reason why it keeps grinding to a halt. Oh, no. When I saw that headline yesterday, if you love sports, you know, you think about what just happened in Houston. They win the World Series, and then they lose their star quarterback.
Well, and that's the point. The magic of sports, as we were discussing with the World Series guys. And then it happens to be he plays for Houston. And what, not even 24 hours after they win the World Series, there's this devastating blow to this rock star young man. You know, I vote in the Heisman, and I put him first on my ballot last year. I thought he was that good. He didn't win, but I thought he should have won. And, you know, no less than Richard Sherman said that last week's game that you alluded to, the best game – any quarterback has ever played against the Seattle Seahawks,
wow,
who can play a little defense. So,
and have been to a few games.
Yes, Richard Sherman has seen a few, yeah. And, you know, what I loved most about Deshaun Watson, and let's hope he gets healthy and comes back, although you never know. I mean, I'm in D.C., and we saw it with RG3. Now, there had been several knee injuries, not just this one, not just one. But, you know, the first paycheck this kid gets as a professional, he donated it to three women who worked in the cafeteria who were undergoing extreme hardship because of Hurricane Harvey. That is what Deshaun Watson did with the first professional paycheck he ever received. That is pretty cool. Now, again, that it's not gone forever, but I think you're right. This season of all seasons with the Kaepernick stuff, with Donald Trump crash landing into it to divide the nation and bring it all back up again. Wow, the feel-good nature of this, I think, what the NFL needs probably now more than ever. And they were dashed quite a blow the other day with this news.
Well, RG3 is an interesting name to throw in there because ACLs are bad. You know, they change the way you play. And what makes Watson so incredible is the combination of his ability to run, his ability to throw, and his ability to make good decisions doing both of those things, which is beyond his age. How this guy ever ended up slipping to 12 is beyond me. And I, you know, he was on a And somebody wrote a whole article about how the Jets passed on him, as desperate as they are for a quarterback. But, you know, there were 11 teams passed on him. Everybody can use a quarterback when you're talking about that kind of talent.
Not as bad as the Jets need a quarterback.
Maybe not. And you wonder, when he comes back from this, is he the same guy? Is he the same guy? Maybe he's young enough that he gets it all back, but there have been players who don't get it all back. Or who were a little tentative about doing it. That's why I was kind of curious how it happened. You know, what could possibly happen in practice that, and maybe that's for the good. You know, maybe whatever happened was such a freak injury that it doesn't play in his head when he's out on the field. Versus if he takes a hit, you know, from a screaming in, a safety or lineman, and then he starts flinching the rest of his career.
And by the way, we'll see. Mitch, by the way, look at all the rules changes they have made to have less contact during the week, okay? And what, 15 months ago, Teddy Bridgewater, another extremely exciting, extremely promising young quarterback, I just read back on it this morning, in a non-contact situation, suffered a complete tear to his ACL and other structural damage. And you started this conversation by saying it. Man, the things that scare you the most in football are the non-contact injuries. Yeah. Because that means something just collapsed. That these young men who, and again, you got to go see some of the stuff that Watson did with his legs and his arm against the Seahawks. And he's just running. I mean, sometimes, even if you're young, your knees explode like tread on a tire. Remember Dan Marino? He was dropping back into the pocket when he tore his Achilles tendon. It just shows you, once again, and we talk about this a lot, and we talked about it for years on the show. When you're bitching about how much these people make in sports, okay, just look at how fragile these careers can be, and how the next moment is the one that can change everything.
And particularly in the NFL, Mike, that's a really good point, because the NFL is the most dangerous by far, and it's the one with the least guaranteed contracts. You know, people don't understand that about football. They see all these huge numbers thrown about, but in most cases, with the rare exception of you know, quarterbacks or franchise players who can get a certain amount of guaranteed money, most of these contracts are year to year. So if you get injured, you could have multi-million dollar contracts. You get injured in 1 year and they decide, you're damaged goods. You get paid for that year and that's it. You're not a baseball pitcher who's still getting paid while he's home drinking beer, you know, because two teams traded him and they're paying off his contract for the next 15 years. You're done. When you're done, you're done.
Now consider the fact that with all of these quarterback injuries and all of these injuries to guys like Watt and running backs and wide receivers, the Patriots traded away a potential star.
I know.
Because, Mitch, they apparently have made the determination that they believe Tom Brady and he's going to play for freaking ever.
I think this is proof that Tom Brady is actually a robot. And they figured it out. Somehow they maybe had a blood test or something and they found out he was bionic. And they said, you know what? We don't need a backup quarterback. On the same week that Deshaun a kid goes down in practice, a 40-year-old is being bet on for the next 5 years.
Mitch, I thought what you just said, I thought the exact same thing. They trade Jimmy Garoppolo, who's really good. And by the way, Jimmy Garoppolo's been hurt in his career as much as Brady has, because he only really had the one injury. The only person who ever really hurt him was Goodell by taking four games from him. They traded away the backup to a 40-year-old man who, you know, and we all roll our eyes when he says, I'm going to play till I'm 45. They must think he's going to play till he's 45.
Well, they must have more offensive linemen in the chute than anybody on the planet, because that position just became the most important position on the New England Patriots. I am astounded. All right, let's shift over to college football. We, on the Monday version of the program, myself and Bob Ryan and Bill Roden, were all anticipating the college football rankings coming out, and we were pretty much sticking with the chalk as the rankings had been at that time, which had Alabama at number one and Georgia at number two. We thought Ohio State would get in there, Oklahoma, whatever. And now here's Georgia's number one, Alabama's behind them. Notre Dame is number three. Clemson is way higher than anybody thought. Ohio State and Penn State right now, if they did the playoffs, are on the outside looking in. So is an undefeated Wisconsin who isn't even close. Chris and Mike, what do you guys make of these rankings, and are they reflective, really, of who the best teams are?
Mitch, I'll defer to an Ohio woman because if you grew up where Chris grew up in Ohio, you have to be passionate about college football. Oh, let me ask you this, Chris, because I might be in the minority. I think Notre Dame is exactly where they're supposed to be. I think if they played Georgia this Saturday, they would beat them. And listen, they got a minefield the rest of the way. But if you're just talking about the season that we have seen so far, and when Notre Dame is good, they're always headliners as much as Alabama in football. I think they're right where they're supposed to be.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. First of all, this is a snapshot. This is just the first look. These things change. You know, so everyone, what is college football if it's not arguing all the time, 24/7?
That's the best.
So this is an opportunity for everyone to get all angry and worked up and wonder what's going on. I agree with you. I think those of us who grew up in places like Toledo, Ohio, learned early on that Notre Dame was always going to pop up, whether to the top, it was going to bubble to the surface, whether it was the AP poll, old UPI poll, this poll. But I agree in this case, they deserve it. They've got Wake Forest, and then just looking ahead to next week.
Oh, no, they've got Miami still to play. They've got Stanford still to play on the road.
Exactly.
It's not easy.
And Miami, is also there. They're 10th in this first poll, in this first college football playoff ranking. So the idea that we could have a Miami-Notre Dame game that means something again is terrific, nostalgic and otherwise. But I do think that Notre Dame is fine there right now. We're going to see movement in this, obviously. Georgia and Alabama would eventually have to play each other in the SEC championship game if everything moves on as planned. You can definitely see Ohio State moving up into the top four as things could work out if they keep winning out. So it's certainly not over yet.
Well, it's not over yet, but and I know it changes week to week, but the thinking that goes into it is on display now. And I'm trying to figure out where that thinking comes from. Now, my initial reaction was Notre Dame is no way they belong at number three. That was my initial reaction because of where they had been sitting in the polls prior to. You know, they had been working their way up from, I don't even know if they were ranked at the start of
but
the season.
But those early polls, it's like talking to a guy at the bar.
I know. Well, a little bit more than talking to the guy at the bar because it's the media and it's the coaches. But all right, I looked at, but when I actually examined the record, and I said, well, okay, you know, Notre Dame has probably played more ranked teams than anybody else because they have an independent schedule, and so it just happens to fall that way. They beat Michigan State, which is now currently ranked, and they clobbered them, and Michigan State's a half-decent team. They beat USC, which was higher ranked than them
clobbered
at the time.
Them.
They beat NC State. Now, so I started to say, all right, well, you've got three wins there, and then one point loss to Georgia, and it was a close game. But then I look at – so then I start to have bigger questions about, like, how is Clemson behind them? Clemson lost to Syracuse. Syracuse. Syracuse is not losing to Georgia by 1 point. It's Syracuse. And then you look at everybody else they played, and they played nobody. They played Kent State, Auburn, Louisville, Boston College, Virginia Tech, which, okay, they're half decent, Wake Forest, and they lose to Syracuse, and they beat Georgia Tech. And there, right now, they'd be in an NFL in a college football playoff. So some of this thinking – is, well, you know, we know what the record is, but we also believe our eyes and we believe history and we know how good they are and we watch them. And if you're going to take that kind of stuff into account and not just who you've played, then I don't know how Ohio State is not in there given what they did. They lost once to a really good Oklahoma team. Yeah. So I don't know how they're not higher. And I'm going to give you another one. They're going to have a problem with Wisconsin. Because Wisconsin, unless they step on their own feet, is going to go undefeated. They don't have to play anybody. They're undefeated right now, and the rest of their season is Iowa, Michigan, and Minnesota. Michigan, they play at home. They could easily win those. You could have a Big Ten team. We're talking about a major conference. This isn't Boise State. An undefeated Big Ten team not even be in the top four.
Well, though they'll play, right, in the Big Ten championship game. So Wisconsin
play in the Big Ten championship. I don't know who they'll end up playing in the Big Ten championship game. Maybe that determines them in or out. But right now, there's no Big Ten team in the top four.
Mitch, you are right about Ohio State. And again, it's a big if. If they ever eliminate mistakes, from 38 to 20 on, they look like the best college football team in the world. JT Barrett finally stepped up. I think Ohio State is loaded and going to get better. And I would rank them ahead of Clemson. I actually love the way this committee, and you don't know what the conversations are like in the room. And I think they put a lot of weight. The Clemson thing is sketchy. They put a lot of weight on the fact that they are the defending national champions, even without Deshaun Watson. I think they put some weight into the fact that their quarterback was clearly not himself, even in a bad upset loss to Syracuse. I believe that Wisconsin is being underappreciated. Miami is getting no respect, maybe because they seem to win in the last 10 seconds every single week. But Chris is right. If there is one tradition about college football that this committee has brought back, we don't just debate the season about who should be number one, but in the years before there were national championship games, we will do this now from now until January. It is great. It is great. And it is great for the sport. And to me, college football is 10 times more interesting than the National Football League right now.
Well, and guys, when people ask why, if you travel around the world, why does the United States not love soccer more? And I say Michigan, Ohio State, or Auburn, Alabama. This is where our passion is. If you've already given your heart to one sport, you can't like rip out part of that heart and give it to soccer. And college football, to me, is our soccer, the way that the Europeans and the rest of the world look at soccer.
Yeah. So. Not to, and I mean, it just to put on one more thing on your point. We also have college basketball. And whenever I get into these arguments with fans about soccer and all the rest of it, and you're absolutely right, Chris, that to me, you're right on the money. That it doesn't exist in the rest of the world. The university system, college sports, is a total unknown to the rest of the world. College just isn't about sports in Europe, in Australia, in the rest of it. And they can't comprehend it. You have the NCAA tournament and you have college football. Those are two things that eat up three quarters of the year if you add them together, and soccer fans are still trying to figure out why don't you care more about the World Cup, whatever.
Mitch, just one more thing about your point about college basketball, and we all love college basketball, okay? College basketball really comes alive over, 19 days in March and into April. Mm-hmm. College football feels like March Madness for three or four months every season.
Especially the polls. Okay. Every single week. All right. Shifting to one other thing we want to get to before we get to our parting shots. The NBA is embryonic right now in its season, so you don't want to spend too much time analyzing things. But a lot of really good teams, or supposedly really good teams, are not having really good starts. Golden State has had its fits and starts. Obviously, Boston suffered a major injury. But probably nothing getting more attention than Cleveland, where over the last six games, they're 1-5. They have gotten routed by the Knicks. I didn't think that was humanly possible that you could get routed by the New York Knicks, but they did. They lost to Indiana. They've lost on the road. They're not playing defense. They're in disarray. LeBron James is doing the LeBron James thing where he simultaneously sort of criticizes himself and criticizes the team. And then there's some overtone of I need to be someplace else next year or whatever. What do we make of the current Cavaliers situation?
Mitch, I've got the standings in front of me right now. You know, in fairness to the Cavaliers, they are third. Third from the bottom in the Eastern Conference. They are currently tied with the Brooklyn Nets, who many, many people aren't aware are still in the National Basketball Association, okay? So here's the thing, and I am a person, I am an avowed LeBron James fanboy, okay? And I have always felt that in my city, New York, he could go down to the West 4th Street playground, find four talented guys, and go to the NBA Finals. Well, we're going to find out this season, aren't we?
Well, that's kind of what they did, isn't it? I mean, it is kind of what they did, except that talented guys not from the playground, but they basically threw a whole new, you know, he's got Derrick Rose, Jose Calderon, Dwayne Wade, a sitting Isaiah Thomas, Jay Crowder. That I just named five guys who haven't played with them before, and now now this is his team. And you know, I guess it's growing pains. Dwayne Wade said, well, we went through this in Miami at the beginning when we all got assembled and we all getting used to one another. But, you know, when does it shake out? And is LeBron James the guy who's going to make it shake out, Chris?
You know, this year's team really resembles the Cavaliers during his first go-round. Although the roster, I think, is a little better than those early Cavs LeBron team. What was that like in, you know, 03-ish to 10, I guess. But the league has become more star-centric and as the years have gone on. And it is glaring right now with Isaiah Thomas out. Kevin Love, his limitations, clearly. I think they're the oldest team in the NBA or right up there and allowing the most points in the NBA. So I have a sense they'll figure it out. I don't think it's time for people in Cleveland to start burning their jerseys or tickets or whatever. They're not going to figure it out?
I don't think they're going to figure it out. I don't think they're going to the NBA Finals this year. I think one of the most interesting things that is currently happening as I look at the standings, you know, as the best record after only 1/10 of the season has been played, Boston Celtics. Celtics, who the guy who I think is the best basketball coach in the world. And you know who they're tied with? There's a larger point I'm trying to make here. The Orlando Magic are 6-2 as well, okay? And I am one who thought that the league being so star-centric and so top-heavy took so much away from the regular season that it was bad for business. And that we, all year last year, we just marked time till it was the Warriors and the Cavs again. You know, Mitch and Chris, we may be seeing a far more compelling National Basketball Association with the super teams not dominating everything than we ever thought we were going
to
see.
Well, that's a really interesting point, and it speaks to the possibility, which I have been thinking about for the last few years, that the players have been taking more and more of a mentality of like, let's just do a pickup game. I want that guy, I want that guy, I want that guy to play with me. And that guy's the best guy, and that guy's the best guy. And we're just going to throw this together, and we know what we're doing out there. And all we need is, you know, man, that guy's a stud, and that guy, when you put the five studs together, we'll take care of it. And it turns out, at least in the early returns, that coaching matters. Coaching actually matters. Team chemistry matters. Role playing matters. Yeah, you can't just throw guys together in the NBA and say, well, he averaged 28 points last year and he averaged 15 assists a game last year. So add that up and we should win every game 170-90. But defense still remains a huge part of the game. It still wins you your championships. And defense is a team thing. You need to, in the NBA, we all understand this. It's not just guarding your guy. It's knowing where your help is when the guy goes past you. It's knowing what happens when you get picked. It's knowing where you have to line up so your guy can get a rebound and how to space the floor. All that kind of stuff takes time and takes chemistry. There's a reason that San Antonio keeps getting older year after year after year after year and is still always there and doesn't turn around its roster and flip it on its end all the time because they have a great coach and they have a system where they learn how to play with one another. Cleveland keeps, you know, going out and trading for guys and new guys around and all the rest of it, and they are paying a price, if you ask me, for newness and unfamiliarity and a lack of playing defense because they're all trying to figure out, well, all right, first let me get my offense together. Who's going to be the man here? Who's going to score? Where am I going to get my points? And then I'll figure out if I'm going to hunker down and play defense. And these are the results you get.
You know, Mitch, I think that I am not giving up on LeBron. I know you're not saying you're giving up on LeBron.
No.
This guy is one of the greatest basketball players of all time, without a doubt. It's just a few games in the season. What I think is that the Cavaliers have to figure out what everyone's comfortable with in their offense. And right now, they seem to be pushing the ball up the floor, what I've seen of them, and it's just maybe they need to slow it down. They got old guys. Maybe they need to play a little slower. There's plenty of time to put it together. But I do agree with you guys. I think there's a parity, to use Pete Rozelle's favorite word from decades ago in another league. There is parity here that there hasn't been before. And what I think that does, it brings so many more teams into the equation and, frankly, so many more fans. This might be one of the best NBA seasons ever simply because everyone does seem to be matched up so well.
And I'll tell you something, you know, Gordon Hayward was in the news this week talking about, you know, what happened to him And you know, guys, in a different way, even though it was in competition, what happened to Hayward is what happened to Deshaun Watson. It is sports. Sports happened to him. But people say, how did that happen? I always say the same thing. Sports happened. And look at how the Celtics have been. Mitch, it speaks to what you're talking about. Because they tried to assemble one of those super teams by getting Kyrie Irving, okay? And now, and they got Al Horford a year ago. They have a really nice basketball team. And again, Brad Stevens, to me, coaches his team better. All the great giant names of the sport, Popovich, Krzyzewski, I would take Brad. If there's a lottery, I would take him, okay? And they've got this kid, Jason Tatum from Duke. They are really fun to watch. And wouldn't it be ironic, as you were talking about the Cavs, Mitch, I was thinking, wouldn't it be ironic if Kyrie is back in the NBA Finals this year and LeBron is not?
Yeah. Well, long way before that, and the small elephant in the room is Isaiah Thomas, because we don't know what this guy's going to bring.
I mean, every time you say that, I still think he should be passing the ball to Joe Dumars.
But how do you think I feel? You know, I live a mile away from where he lived. I mean, it's I can't get used to it. I just like the fact that there's an extra A in his name, so I can identify him differently from the Isaiah here. But you know, they traded Kyrie Irving for a reason. They didn't just trade Kyrie Irving to go get a draft pick. They traded Kyrie Irving for Isaiah Thomas. And if Isaiah Thomas can be as good as Isaiah Thomas once was, that's a major, major piece that's missing from their lineup. Tristan Thompson is out there now as well. But to wrap this up, he doesn't come back for a while.
Nope.
And by the time he comes back, if let's say it's January, they're saying December, I'll say January, and that injury is a bad injury. Now, you still have to get used to playing with one another, and as we have seen, it can take a season. It can take two seasons in the case of Miami,
yep.
To really start to gel as a unit, even with superstar names on your roster. So, Mike, you could end up being absolutely right. You could have somebody other than LeBron in the finals when it looked like Cleveland was making all the right moves to try to, make a superstar team.
And Mitch, speaking of what we like to call the ebb and flow of the NBA season, my guy Lonzo Ball had kind of a tough night last night against the Portland Trailblazers. 28 minutes, no points.
No sympathy here, because the best part was I didn't hear anything from his dad.
I'm teeing you up. My guy Lonzo, let me just give you his line, okay, Mitch? 28 minutes played, zero for two from the floor, no free throws, four assists, three rebounds, and somehow with all of that, the Lakers were plus 10 with him on the court.
Well, I'll say this for what Lonzo Ball and his father have wrought. They are making the Lakers go through
what they've
the
wrought?
Toughest season.
You make it sound biblical.
Yes, he speaks a little biblically, doesn't he?
Yeah, and in terms of youth sports, which I know is not a topic for the day, but holy smokes, he makes bad parents look terrible. And what a role model, or lack thereof, for every parent screaming at their kid on every little soccer game this weekend,
Oh, they're right. There's 10 more coming up as we speak right now who think that's the way to go and brag about your kids, take them out of school, teach them yourself, get every coach fired in high school who doesn't agree with you. Yeah, that's exactly the way to go, because look at what's happening to the Ball guys and they're out there. But just to finish up what I was saying, L.A. is getting everybody's best game. In a regular season where very few NBA teams really care a whole lot, let's be honest about it, about any given regular season game. Some nights they bring it, some nights they don't, and they don't really worry about the difference between the two. They bring it against the Lakers because they want to embarrass him. And consequently, the Lakers end up, they're going to become a decent team if they really do have the talent, because they are facing everybody's best game in November and December when you don't usually get that kind of effort. So who knows? This could be like a boy named Sue. You end up tougher as a result of...
And biblically speaking, I just hope that when Lonzo turns around to look at his dad some night, he doesn't turn his dad into a pillar of salt, Mitch.
Or expect his father to part the Red Sea, which I think his father thinks he can do. All right, time to reach the most fun part of the show, our parting shots, and Christine Brennan fires first.
Well, thanks, Mitch. More than 2 years ago, on a high school practice field in Wichita Falls, Texas, 14-year-old freshman Colton Ward was going through his first day of two-a-days when he missed a screen pass and reached to pick up the ball just as a teammate dove for it and slammed into him. Colton felt his knee dislocate and knew something was wrong. Soon he was being airlifted to Dallas to try to save the leg. It was the same injury as the Bears' Zach Miller would suffer just this past week. For more than a year and through 17 surgeries, Colton fought to keep his leg, enduring horrible pain in his foot and missing weeks of school. Finally, at the age of 16, he made the only decision he felt he could. He had his lower leg amputated. That was in May. Last week, the coaches at Rider High put him into his first game. When his teammates noticed, they began chanting his name. Wearing his artificial leg, Colton played a dozen plays, and he was in on two tackles. When football season ends, Colton Ward is looking forward to track season.
The cult of the movie Animal House sometimes feels like a bit of a generational thing. But there is one phrase from the movie that has stood the test of time, and that's the one about double secret probation. And I'm reminded of that today because Ezekiel Elliott, thanks to the frequent slapstick of the American judicial system, has once again delayed his six-game suspension involving the serious and not slapstick suspension for domestic violence. The second U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, which you sometimes think might convene over a garage, has now granted a request for an administrative stay to the Players Association on behalf of Elliott. So that means Elliott gets to play on Sunday against the Chief before another panel is supposed to convene on his case next week. The thing has now gone on longer than Elliott was at Ohio State and feels even longer than the Trump presidency. As we get further and further away from what started this, the charges against Elliott for putting his hand on a woman that got him put on real probation in the first place.
In the middle of an interview with Fox Sports' Ken Rosenthal, Houston's Carlos Correa stopped talking about how great it felt to just win a World Series long enough to ask his girlfriend to marry him. He had the ring. He had the woman a few feet away. Most of all, he had Rosenthal in on the plan. This way, Ken knew not to interrupt him when he said to his beloved, quote, "You make me the happiest man in the world. Will you marry me?" This contrasts to 10 years ago at the Fiesta Bowl when on the sidelines, Chris Myers from Fox was interviewing Boise State star Ian Johnson. They just finished a perfect season. At the end of the interview, Chris turned and said, "So I know you're going to propose to your girlfriend." The girlfriend looked stunned. So did Johnson. In comedy, we call that tipping the bit. Myers said he did it because he didn't want the producers to cut away, but it left Johnson little choice but to get down on one knee and do the proposal. Fortunately, the woman said yes, and fortunately, they are still married today, 10 years later, so no harm done. However, Rosenthal learned that important and most fundamental lesson. If someone wants to pop the question, just get out of the way. That's going to do it for the Sports Reporters podcast for this Friday. We do this every Monday and Friday, and you can get it. Obviously, you already have if you're listening, but you can get it permanently and subscribe to it wherever you get your favorite podcast. Certainly, you can go to Apple iTunes podcast, go to the Sports Reporters and hit subscribe. If you like what you've heard, leave us a review. We'd love to hear from you and your thoughts on it. We'll be back on Monday to wrap up what is going to be a very big weekend in football and college football. And until we do that, on behalf of Chris Brennan and Mike Lupica, this is Mitch Albom saying, have a great weekend.